Okay, this is your World War III update. How do I even start this video? I got a real bad feeling, guys. Never have I been so replete with dread. Because it all just fell into place today. I can see it. I can see exactly what's coming. Now, I understand that stoicism is a quality that should always try to be exhibited, especially if you're a leader. But there's times when it's more motivating to level with people and to communicate to them how dire and perilous the situation is about to become. I would hope that what I'm about to tell you today is going to motivate you to be healthier, to be wealthier, and to be a more upstanding, productive person. I don't want people to despair. I don't want people to do things that are counterproductive to them or family or their communities. I want this information to motivate you to be a better person all around, okay? Because that's the only thing we can do. Because right now, it just occurred to me that human beings are incapable of rectifying many of the fragmentations that have occurred across the numerous dividing lines in society, and it's only going to get worse, and it's largely due to a paucity of understanding, our inability to empathize with one another. Okay? Throughout our evolution, there's been a push and pull. Armageddon is always in a race with utopia. And utopia is always just barely, ever so barely edged out evil. Good has always marginally edged out evil. But we have a lot of debts to pay. And while I do think, ultimately, good will overcome evil, in the end, life will prevail. Unfortunately, there's a reckoning coming. Okay? And it's largely due to our inability to empathize with one another. And that's why I'm so utterly replete with dread today, because I can see it. It's tangible. It's palpable. I can feel it in the air. Things are about to get really, really nasty. So, why the long face, you might say? Well, let's talk about the facts. Let's get back down to earth for a second. Here's what's going to happen. Vladimir Putin came out today and he said that they're going to be expanding the special military operation to 3 more buffer zones. Russia is about to expand the war to create a buffer zone between Ukraine and Russia. This is just commonsensical and something that, you know, we all should have seen coming, because there's that huge area where Ukraine directly borders Russia proper, which obviously Russia is going to need to do something about. There is so much stuff happening today. I can rattle off all the facts. Please sit with me. But I need you to also understand that as a person who is taking in this information nonstop, and I know some of you are as well, but a person who has researched this stuff for a long period of time, long before I ever was a prepper, I understood the human condition very well long before I ever made a foray into preparedness. And part of the reason why is the same thing that is compelling me to feel such consternation today. And bad things are coming, okay? And part of the problem is that many people who may have left the channel when Trump was elected because they thought I was being too critical of him. I know that they understand what's going on, but not all of them, of course, but there are many of them who are putting their blinders on because they still believe it's the lesser of two evils. And as a person who was advocating for somebody who I thought was the lesser of two evils here, which is our conservative government, I was a proponent of the Pierre Poilievre campaign here in Canada because one of my primary issues is gun rights. I can understand how I'm willing to overlook so many things just for the sake of that. But I need you to understand that as soon as Putin says niet to Trump, things are going to get scary in a way that I don't think anybody is prepared for. Here's what's going on today. Trump just invoked a wartime act on uranium, set to sign nuclear orders to increase nuclear energy in the United States. That is what they want you to think. Not only, this is primarily serving three purposes. Number one, the United States is largely dependent on Russia, yes, Russia, for their enriched uranium. Now they're going to be doing that on their own, primarily. This is also for the sake of AI, but it's also for the sake of creating nuclear weapons. You have to ask yourself, what is the urgency in enriching more uranium and creating this rapid rollout of nuclear power? I thought we had abundant oil reserves. Oil is incredibly cheap at this point in time. Well, there's three main reasons. One, it's to power AI, which is arguably worse than a nuclear weapon. Two is nuclear weapons themselves. And three is to be less dependent on Russia. And it's the beginning of a new nuclear arms race. I mean, let's just keep things in perspective for a second, okay? Consider what has transpired. Trump has rolled out the B-61-13 gravity bomb a year ahead of schedule, okay? They recently did a deployment, which was really a trial run of B-2 bombers to Diego Garcia. He's building a golden dome, which is going to weaponize space with nuclear weapons. He's talking about annexing Greenland, which is solely for the purpose of going to war with China and Russia. They're currently distributing air power throughout Europe, and they're now recommencing surveillance in the Black Sea. And why that's so important is because in the last 24 hours, guys, Russia was yet again attacked by 500 Ukrainian drones. 500. Now, when Biden was in office, if I was to tell you that 500 drones made their way into any part of Russia in a month, never mind a day, this is supposed to be the peace president, remember. And what do we have here today? We have Vladimir Putin expanding the war to 8 oblasts. They said, if we can't get 5, if you don't agree to 5 right now, we're going to take 8. So they're taking 8. Trump is still providing weapons via proxy through the circuitous route of Europe. That's how they're going to do it. We're going to sell weapons, not to Ukraine, but we're going to do it to Europe. In Europe, you can give those weapons to Ukraine. They continue to position U.S. assets all throughout Europe in a distributed fashion, just like you would do before a major attack, a decapitation strike attempt. Now, you factor in all these things, Palantir, which I talk about a lot on the channel, the ability to have AI try to find the most efficient means of conducting a widespread decapitation strike on Russia, leveraging all of the data that Ukraine has collected from these hundreds of drone strikes, which are far more numerous and frequent than they were under Biden, which is insane to think that people are still living in la-la land, that they think this guy is bringing peace. And it's not Trump, okay? And we got to really get this. It wasn't Biden, and it's not Trump. Trump is arguably one of the most weather-vane politicians I think we've had in a while, at least in this term. And a lot of people, the ongoing joke is, you know, the last person to talk to Trump that day is the opinion he's going to have. So the opinion of his last advisor, that's what he's going to run with. Okay. So, and it's almost, maybe it's some market manipulation going on in there between, you know, various people with different portfolios. I got to talk to him last because, you know, we got to, you know, pump these markets tonight or short these markets or whatever. But I mean, really just think about what's going on. The war with Russia is getting way worse than it was. Way worse than it was under Biden. They're still doing deep strikes. How is Ukraine doing all that stuff? They're doing it with intelligence and the reconnaissance of American, primarily American, but NATO, more generally, ISR. And so if what they were saying was truthful about wanting to back out of this thing, they could have did it a long time ago. But here we are. Once again, insidiously moving towards the inevitable. And we're about to reach a breaking point because people are starting to snap in Ukraine. Recruiters are getting beat up in the streets. And what that means is that Ukraine is going to have to approach this with a much more heavy hand. And if Zelensky can't keep his people in line, then NATO troops are next. NATO troops are going to go mask off very soon in Ukraine. We're just, it's simply a matter of logistics at this point. It's not a matter of do they have the political capital to execute something like that. It's simply a matter of whether they're going to do it. I mean, look at all the cyber attacks. Spain, the UK. The UK is still reeling. One of their largest retailers had a cyber attack happen, I think, a month ago, and they're saying it's going to last until July. Every single day, substations being exploded. And do you hear anything about this? No. Do you see people losing their shit every single day? Absolutely. You've seen what happened with the murders of the two Israeli staffers. Apparently, one was former IDF. And the response to that, okay, if it's any indication, and if it's any measure, how that triggered that event, which was wrong, violence is wrong. You always have to provide that disclaimer, right? Because it's so, people are so quick to try to pigeonhole you into one side or the other. But if the reaction to that, two people being murdered, could potentially be what breaks the camel's back to start a massive regional war, which will have nuclear implications with Israel and Iran. I just think about how close we are to this whole thing just falling apart, man. And most people just do not understand that at all. They just take everything that is heard at face value. And even those people who claim to be outside the box, alternative, independent thinkers always succumb to the controlled opposition they put in front of you. And this is why I'm so jaded with it all, because I can see that this is an irreconcilable situation which needs to play itself out. There's got to be a bang and then a few whimpers. And then maybe we can all have some sense knocked into us and we can build anew. But until that time, we're on the edge of our seats. And let's not talk about the economy, which is teetering on the brink. A Cold War era statute could soon return to the forefront of American energy policy, according to Newsweek and Reuters, as President Donald Trump prepares to sign a series of executive orders as soon as Friday to jumpstart the nuclear energy industry. When we had our resident nuclear physicist, I call them our resident, they don't work here, but they actually build the Geiger counters that we sell. When I had them in studio recently, they were talking about how uranium is not necessarily one of the best ways to do nuclear energy. There's alternative fuels that are out there nowadays. And so this focus on uranium is primarily for the purpose, I think, of acting as a conduit to get more supply to build more nuclear weapons. Because if you're going to fight a front, multiple fronts, because right now the Russians are also, the whole nuclear non-proliferation thing, there's no treaties, and there's nothing anymore, okay? There's no intermediate range nuclear treaty, there's no New START, there's no SALT, there's nothing. And so, because the United States now has to deal with China, they have to make more nuclear weapons, and they have to do it fast. And you're talking about a country whose industrial capability has been severely neutered over the last 20 years of their relying on slave labor and exporting their carbon footprint to other countries. So what needs to happen then is a literal wartime act to bring for nuclear energy, right? I mean, people are that stupid, they're going to believe this. They're going to believe that he's doing this to build nuclear power plants. And while that might be true to an extent, the real reason for this is those three things. Primarily to build nuclear weapons, to power AI, which is going to be a nuclear weapon in itself, and for the sake of cutting dependency with the multipolar world. A draft summary of executive orders reviewed by Reuters indicates Trump will invoke the Defense Production Act, originally enacted during the Cold War, to declare a national emergency over reliance on Russia and China for enriched uranium, nuclear fuel, and processing. And all people are just going to walk away, oh, it's so I can get cheaper internet. Nope. It's because we're doomed. I mean, I know that I'm not doomed in the sense that I'm prepared for this, but I say that with the hopes that it compels you to prepare more. And please do so in as a constructive and loving manner as possible. Don't feed the flames. It's easy to get angry and embroiled in all this stuff because, trust me, I know. I have a hard time keeping my mouth shut. And I fly too close to the sun sometimes and fight battles that I need not fight. And that's not what we need to be doing right now. What we need to be doing is preparing. That's all we can do, is prepare. Russia is expanding its war aims. Now, a few days ago, Margarita Simonyan, who is the CEO of RT, Russia Today, which is one of the Kremlin's primary outlets, although it's slightly more Americanized in some respects, but she made a tweet and she said the following. This is after the fallout of those talks in Istanbul, where it lasted like 2 hours. Basically, both sides left, said their piece, and they flew back to Moscow because it was a bunch of bullshit, right? She said, this story has been making the rounds that Ukrainians were outraged when Russian negotiators said that Ukrainian soldiers must leave the four Russian regions. They were outraged, as if, you know, taken by surprise. Give me a break. As part of a ceasefire, to which the Moscow delegation replied, next time it will be five. Okay? So four new Russian regions. Obviously, they already count Crimea. They view that as de facto, you know, Russian land. But they're talking about the four oblasts. But they said next time it might be five, indicating that there's another section of Ukraine above and beyond the four annexed territories that they mostly control, but not entirely quite yet, that they would be conquering. But then she goes on, now a reporter in Istanbul got to ask the Russian side how it really went down. Okay, and here's what the Russian side had to say. We didn't say five, we said eight. And today, Vladimir Putin comes out gives an address to his people in Russian saying that we now have to create a buffer zone. And where does this buffer zone fall? Well, it falls along three new oblasts. Three, plus Crimea, plus the four annexed. What is that? Eight. So she was right. Her intelligence was correct. And so when they're saying that we are going to take eight territories, when Putin says buffer zone, understand that that is newspeak for we're going to annex that territory. Now, in the same way, it is being euphemistically described to his Russian comrades as a special military operation. This is going to be described as just a buffer zone, you know, just a peaceful little zone of neutrality. But ultimately, Ukraine, and everybody knows what this is, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, Ukraine and Russia share a direct border. And I'm looking at the map, I'm saying, how could they possibly want to leave this open, right? It just makes no sense. So I'm starting to realize that if things don't make sense, they will eventually, with respect to this geopolitical turmoil. Putin publicly announced plans for a security buffer zone between Russia and Ukraine, signaling further territorial ambitions. And he did this with the exact same assertive demeanor, borderline aggressive demeanor, that he did every single time he has upped the ante. Like his posture, the way he was speaking, his mannerism was exactly the same as when he declared the initial ceasefire, the initial special military operation in the first place. Very firm, stern, and committed. And the only other time I've seen him like that was when Evgeny Prigozhin was making his way to Moscow. And remember what Evgeny Prigozhin said before he died. He said that World War III is coming, and that if you want a good seat at the table, and I'm paraphrasing here, then you should enlist now, implying that maybe you'll be an officer and you won't be forced in a trench. But if you wait, you might be conscripted. Now, we know what happened to him. He was clearly passionate about the cause, but a little bit too passionate, and couldn't keep his mouth shut, so his plane just accidentally went down in mid-flight. 500 drones in 48 hours. NATO is launching 500 drones. Oh, it's Ukraine. What are you talking? No, it's not Ukraine. Come on. Are we still there? And people just think like, oh yeah, you know, just another day. Now, here's what's wrong. Russia is introducing new air-to-air nuclear missiles. Why would they ever do such a thing? Air-to-air nuclear missiles? Why would you need to be so specific? Because remember, the United States just fast-tracked their B-61-13 dial-a-yield tactical nuclear bomb, which really isn't tactical. That's kind of deceptive unto itself, because I think these things can go up to 350 kilotons. Which is 25 times what Hiroshima was. So ain't nothing tactical about that. That's a big boomer, all right? Now, why on earth would Russia be interested in air-to-air that's firing a missile from a plane to somewhere else in the sky? So a nuclear detonation in the sky, an airburst, but not an airburst in the, you know, sense that it's the term is usually used, in that you want to maximize the blast radius, which is why they detonate them in the air, unless you're trying to penetrate deep into the ground into a bunker, then you do a ground-based detonation. Why air-to-air? Well, let's muse about that for a little bit, shall we? Russia is introducing new air-to-air missiles with nuclear warheads as a part of a general expansion of its nuclear forces. You still believe in that nuclear non-proliferation treaty stuff? It is reported that this is presumably a modernized version of the R-37M missile. Russia maintains a nuclear stockpile of about 1,500 deployed strategic warheads and about 2,000 non-strategic warheads. Now, full disclaimer here, I went on AI, ChatGPT, and I said, okay, I can think of a few things, EMP chief among them, as to why Russia might be doing something like this. And ChatGPT had some interesting things to say. It said that Russia is signaling that it's ready to escalate even during air engagements. So potentially as a way of deterring NATO from trying to amass too much force in a concentrated region where they could be targeted. In addition to that, there's been a lot of interceptions and contesting of international airways. Of course, there's a lot of stuff going on at sea, and Russia knows that eventually there's going to be an altercation over its shadow fleet, as it was in Estonia recently, where they had to deploy a Su-34 fighter jet to basically, as a show of intimidation to the Estonian Coast Guard, or whoever it was that tried to commandeer this Russian vessel. So this is a way to intimidate, primarily. It creates fear and hesitation in a NATO air response. It destroys entire formations, potentially, AWACS, tankers, stealth, in one strike. Now, obviously, I'm not sure how concentrated, you know, these planes are going to be, the flight patterns are going to be, if they're going to be, you know, I'm sure there's going to be escort planes that you would want to neutralize as well. And as I indicated, there's also potential electromagnetic pulse effects. EMP is line of sight. While the EMP effect wouldn't be as substantial from that height in terms of the impacted area, it would still have a very widespread effect because, of course, you know, basically line of sight from the altitude that these exchanges would happen would still be fairly significant. So you're talking about potentially whole cities, the equivalent of county-size regions, could potentially be blacked out as a result of the electromagnetic pulse of these air-to-air nuclear missiles. This denies entire sectors of airspace instantly. So not only do you have to distribute your force, but you may just not want to enter into that airspace at all, knowing that Russia may have airplanes, and they must presume that every nuclear-capable aircraft, at least from this point forward and likely for the last few years, could have potentially had a nuclear weapon on it. Thus, you always have to have that posture of readiness. Counters NATO's airborne nuclear delivery systems preemptively. And it's kind of like a shotgun, you know, when maybe you only need a 22, it just guarantees that you're going to hit something. It could also be used for the purpose of air defense. The guest I had on, codename Castle Bravo, was talking about how they might utilize air-based nuclear detonations to intercept incoming missiles, because that's the only way you can cover a large enough area to hit a bullet with a bullet, right? So I guess a good analogy would be, it's probably quite difficult to hit a 5.56 with another 5.56, but maybe if you had like the most granular birdshot possible, that would be like the equivalent of the nuke. Maybe you would be able to throw it off course or disable it somehow, disable the firing mechanism or something. Maybe that's what they're thinking with this. Maybe it's to actually intercept incoming nuclear weapons. That's a possibility. It fits Russia's escalate to de-escalate nuclear doctrine. So, again, the intimidation factor with the hopes that that would compel the West to make some concessions. It tests NATO's rules of engagement and resolve. So just to see what they're going to do. It adds strategic ambiguity, forces adversaries to second-guess every possible encounter. Perhaps they have no intention of using it at all, and it's just purely for the purpose to create confusion and subterfuge. Perhaps it's all about psychological warfare. That is a possibility. Now, in terms of what's happening on the European continent today with preparations for this war with Russia, Air and Space Force, MAG, two B-52H bombers from Minot Air Force Base arrived in Spain on May 20th for a new deployment aiming for flexible operations from smaller bases. Recall, I believe it's six, is it six or four? I can't remember exactly the total amount of B-52s currently at Diego Garcia that have recently replaced the B-2s, which of course, if they needed to, those B-2s could just deploy from the United States to pretty much anywhere they needed to go in the world. They wouldn't be able to come back, but there's many bases throughout that region that they could utilize if need be. So really, the United States is assuming a force posture, which is indicative that something big is about to go down. I'm guessing that it's about to go down in Iran, because as we're going to talk about, it appears as though the conditions that Steve Witkoff and his entourage are requiring of Iran, that they aren't going to be acquiescing to these U.S. diktats about their nuclear enrichment program. And that means that it's pretty much on. And now that Israel has its casus belli with, or an additional fuel in the victim tank, they're going to use that to whatever extent possible to try to crack down on any dissenting voices. And it's only going to make matters worse. That's the thing. This is all a vicious cycle. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more you try to suppress people from speaking out on what you're doing, the louder they're going to have to be. And if people, and I'm not condoning this at all, I want to make that abundantly clear. I'm just talking in principle now. If you take away people's voice, then all they have is action. And so the best thing to do, you know, unless you were really, really concerned that those voices were going to have some sort of noticeable effect on your agenda, would be to just let people talk. Unless you're yay, then maybe, you know, you probably could have silenced that guy. But even that, you got to ask yourself, why was yay let back on X? We're not going to go down that rabbit hole, but I'm telling you guys, there's an agenda at work right now to fracture society along numerous divisive lines so that at any moment, if they need to, they can get us fighting about something. And the falsehoods that are being perpetuated right now are, it's so disheartening for me because I see how wrong a lot of people are. I'm a very empirical person. And I can tell you the people who proclaim to be scientific and data-driven and driven by facts, not feelings, more often than not, aren't. And that smacks of a agenda. And the agenda right now is very, very dirty. Very, very dirty. And they're planning something big, okay? If you think that we're going to go gently into this good night with our $40 trillion or in debt, whatever other Western country equivalent of the American debt is, if you think that it's all just going to be a soft landing, and people are going to, you know, and look at how people rage over people cutting them off. I'm one of them. I when you're out there driving and, you know, you got a place to go and you forget, right? You forget what really matters in life. And in some, for some reason in our world, in our neck of the woods out here in the West, people are just not ready for real deal hardship. And, yeah, it's going to get rough. There's currently drills underway in Estonia involving 16,000 NATO troops. What do you think Russia is thinking with these exercises? And you know, the interesting thing is, what are you hearing about now? Oh, why is Russia building its forces up on the border with Finland? Why was the border between Finland and Russia closed? Was that Russia who did that? Nope. It was Finland. Why right now are they running exercises, and this is on the BBC, you can go look it up, in Norway's nuclear bunkers? They've been running these nuclear exercises throughout Europe for the last 2.5 years, the biggest exercises since the Cold War. And now you're seeing war mobilization on a scale not seen since World War II. And every country is talking about subscription. And all you hear from people is, la, 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 you're just a doomsayer. I mean, when it all goes down, what are these people going to say? And I'm not going to take any sort of joy in knowing that those people are kicking themselves for not doing more. And the fact is, in some places, what could you do, right? If you were in Ukraine, if you were in the eastern part of Ukraine, what could you have done to prepare for that? Except move. You could have done much. I mean, maybe there's some guy holed up in a bunker that is, you know, Russian soldiers are going overhead, oblivious. Maybe there's a few guys like that, some LMOs out there, last man on earth, but I doubt it. Right now, they're simulating a Russian invasion of the Baltics. If you're Russia, and you got these three little Chihuahua countries on your border, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way towards the people there, I just mean in terms of their ability to bring to bear force. You got these three very insignificant countries militarily on your border that will be used as a staging ground for German troops that are currently training to deploy there at this time, in order to be a tripwire, so that when Russia does invariably go into these countries in order to, you know, save their Russian-speaking populations from persecution, same playbook as in Ukraine, then, you know, Germany and all those countries are going to come to their aid, right? And they're going to threaten Article 5. Do you think Russia, once they take Ukraine, do you think they're going to give a shit about Article 5? Do you think they're really going to believe that NATO is going to go to nuclear war over the Baltics? Now, I could be wrong about this. Maybe we will, because that's probably our staging ground for an invasion of Moscow. That's what they're going to have to use as a launch pad. And I don't know what the topography is of the region. It's a lot of forest, so I don't know how easy it is to move tanks throughout that region, which is probably why maybe Russia is not too overly concerned about it. Whereas Ukraine, the front, it's like, a prairie forest transition zone, so you can roll tanks through quite easily. I'm not sure what the, I'd have to really talk to somebody who knows something about that region to understand it. But if I'm Russia, man, why wouldn't you take the Baltics after you were done with, you know, why wouldn't you? Because you'd have the capability, 16,000 troops. I mean, you're probably talking, 50,000 troops across those three countries. And they've basically been giving every single thing they have to Ukraine. That's why these countries are, part of their war plan is a mass evacuation out of the country into Poland or, through the Suwalki or over the Baltic Sea, because they know what's going to happen. And I don't know how they're going to be able to justify it, but when that happens, I mean, this could be years into the future, but eventually something has to happen there. Okay, now we're focused on Europe today, but there's still the situation of China, which is for many the much bigger situation. Then, of course, there's the issue of Iran. Now, I should just mention before we move on to Iran that MERS and Pistorius, the war secretary in Germany, visited Lithuania today to cement Germany's frontline military presence. They're planning full deployment by 2027. German troops on the border with Russia in the current fractured state of international security. You're going to have German troops who are claiming that they want to have the biggest military. Let's see how that works out. And the Germans are probably going to get nukes. It really doesn't matter because they have US nukes in the country, but they want their own nuclear weapons. As I indicated, Norway is hosting NATO's Arctic War headquarters inside a mountain there complex. And of course, they've practicing this distributed force thing, the same thing with the B-52s. They're getting everything positioned so that not only are things spread out, but they're doing training to deploy from things like highways and unconventional military or just normal commercial runways, so that in such case of a nuclear strike, they aren't taken out in one fell swoop, okay? France is also deploying a surveillance ship in the Baltics to monitor Russian shadow tankers. So what do you think they're going to do when they detect a shadow tanker? That's when France and Russia are going to get into it, and that's when Russia is going to deploy one of those planes that may have a nuclear weapon on it in an attempt to counter the other side. Now, the approach that the Americans and Europe is taking towards this decapitation scheme is one of counterforce. So what they want to do with AI, primarily driven by the public company we know, I'm sure there's many others that are involved in connecting all of the autonomous assets so that at the flick of a switch, they can neutralize as many potential elements of Russia and China's nuclear triad as possible. So that's the counterforce strategy, and they actually think they can do it with conventional weaponry. It's hard to say what constitutes conventional nowadays, and it's hard to say whether or not they have some sort of secret weapon. Remember, Trump's been talking about secret weapons, and now they're going full steam ahead with two things that are completely lost on people. Number one, this nuclearization of space, and Stargate. A part of that Stargate AI-driven program is that they're going to have their nuclear systems, I don't want to say managed, but I can't remember the specifics of the story that came out a month and a half ago, but it was something to the effect of Stargate is going to oversee the operations of strategic forces in some to some degree to coordinate all of that. Because the trick is to try to destroy as much of China and Russia's capability to stage a nuclear response as possible. And, you know, I mean, that's a big piece of cheese. Russia, and Russia in particular, is probably more enticing. China, even though Russia has more advanced nuclear delivery systems, you know, China would probably be more difficult because it's a far more populous population, and you really don't know what they have, perhaps as much, perhaps the, and this is pure speculation, but I'm guessing that the espionage that is conducted against China isn't nearly as good as what's conducted against Russia because they don't have that long history, and there's a lot more overlap between East and, or between West and West, Russia and the United States. Now, in terms of this potential Iranian flashpoint, so here's the status of the negotiations. The Iranian foreign minister, okay, the top guy who's negotiating these things next to the president and the Ayatollah, I can't believe they're sending that guy in the first place. This is why the problem is the way it is. They should have left more rungs up the escalation ladder. They should have sent lower level diplomats in order to negotiate. Because every senior official above who you send is another potential off-ramp or a way to stall or postpone the inevitable. And they're at the top guy. So who else goes? Pezeshkian? The Iranian president? The Ayatollah? That's probably not going to happen, right? Maybe Pezeshkian will engage in some arrangement in a third-party country, but it's unlikely. So the Iranian envoy, Araghchi, says that if talks fail, the U.S. must find a new plan, effectively taunting the United States. And this was the guy who was sweating his ass off the other day when the Ayatollah was giving his speech about how, you know, we need to brace ourselves for what's coming. Right now, there are intelligence gathering operations throughout Iran. RC-135 rivet joints, these are American planes, obviously, forced to squawk emergency code 7700 while gathering intel on Iran, returned to Al-Udeid airbase. Squawking an emergency code, you say. Interesting. Were they targeted? Were they identified by radar? I don't think the Iranians would turn their radars on for that, but you never know. He's set to travel to Rome for the fifth round of direct talks with the United States. Indirect talks, I should say. Figuring out the path to a deal is not rocket science, he claims. Zero nuclear weapons equals we do have a deal. This is what the Iranian foreign minister is saying, okay? Listen to this. He's saying, zero nuclear weapons, we can agree to that. In fact, they've even agreed to having more inspectors in their facility. But the United States, which is Israel, is never going to go for that because they'll just be of the persuasion that there's always a time delay. It's not like a permanent installation. As far as I know, I'm not an expert in how they monitor these situations, but I would presume that the argument would be, well, they're just hiding it, regardless of how many people you have where. We do not have a deal. If they're asking for zero enrichment, which is what Witkoff is asking for, zero enrichment, I think above 3.67%, which is what is required for nuclear weapons, then we do not have a deal. Time to decide, they say. So now we get to figure out who's bluffing. But either way, I mean, what we can hope for is that the U.S. and Israel are actually far weaker and they're bluffing. Because the only thing they can effectively do is nuke Iran. This notion that a country the size of Iran, who's been preparing for decades, is going to have their air defenses defeated in one sortie. You remember that? One sortie flown, that all of their air defense was defeated. And you look at how, look at what the Ukrainians have sustained for 3 years, and that's a smaller country, half the population. Arguably, they have some of the capabilities because of NATO. But you look at the Houthis, how long did that campaign go on? And they're still firing ballistic missiles. So do you seriously think that they're going to take out all of Iran's? I mean, think about that. If they can convince you to believe that, what else can they convince you of? A lot. And I got to make a video on that. That might be my last video. I got to say, though, we're going to be splitting up the channel soon. I know I've been saying this for a long time, but we're in the situation where we're defeating ourselves with the algorithm because I'm trying to present preparedness information, which is one thing into itself, and then I'm doing these daily updates, and the things are counteracting one another. So I know I've said this on several occasions. I've even had some spin-off channels. They didn't really work out. There was no staying power. This time I mean it, and it's going to happen very soon. So just expect that. I'll let you know as soon as possible so I can keep you as apprised of what my perceptions are, if you find that valuable, of what's going on. I'd say that contrary to what many claim, I've been fairly on point. Remember, I was one of the very few people, at the expense of losing hundreds of thousands of subscribers. Okay, that's why my channel sub count has been in stasis, because we're getting new subs, but many are leaving. Unfortunately, a lot of people who are mega supporters, and I don't care if you're mega, like I say, I understand the lesser of two evils argument. I get that. But a lot of people, you know, they thought that my cynicism, it wasn't cynicism, it was realism, at the time that Trump was going to resolve these problems and that, oh yeah, the war is over and it's time to be optimistic. Well, look what's happened. Have I not been proven correct? Are you not entertained? 100% correct. We are deeper in the shit now than we were under Biden, and that's not because Trump is worse than Biden. It's just because it's a continuation of the policy. And until you guys get that, you guys who probably don't watch the channel anymore, you're always going to be wondering what happened. I'm never wondering what happened. I know exactly what is going to happen. There's going to be a war with Iran. Europe is going to go to war with Russia. A nuke is going to get used. They're going to normalize the use of tactical nuclear weapons. There's going to be artificial intelligence thrown in the mix in a myriad of ways. There's going to be cyber attacks. You're not going to know if the newscaster that you're hearing when the lights come back on is real or if they're artificial intelligence. There's going to be dystopian fiefdoms. There's going to be, you know, I mean, every frick, what we're going to enter is every single sci-fi movie boiled into one. That's what we're going into. There's going to be pockets of utopia here and there. There's going to be San Angeles, as it was called in Demolition Man. You know, Taco Bell. Everybody's going to be happy and smiling, but are they really going to be happy? That's the question. It's probably going to be Canada. And with respect to China, CIA deputy director decided to say that China is an existential threat unlike anything ever faced before. You really think those tariffs, you really think that situation was resolved? Oh man, there's people out there right now who think it's game on. They think it's all good now, right? Yeah, China and the United States, we're going back to how it was. So, on that note, I think that's all I need to say today. Prepare, because the shit is about to go down.